disability and the like. And typically, they'll develop significantly disabling ataxia much sooner. I think 2 to 3 years is a little fast, but certainly by 5, 6, 7 years, they could be using walkers and wheelchairs. Well, for the genetic ataxias, it's a much slower progression. There can be, other things, sleep disturbances, breathing disturbances, which can often lead to increased morbidity and mortality as well. So the management of people with MSA is different from regular sporadic ataxia. So, common medication strategies that we actually have in hand right now, things that we can do right now. And I think all of you have this handout, Medications for Ataxic Symptoms, which was a joint effort of myself and various other of the neurologists who work together with NAF. There are no FDA-approved drug treatments for ataxia, not for symptoms, not for modifying the disease, and not for neural restoration. So there's really nothing the FDA is going to recognize as being proven to help ataxia. There are a lot of medications used off-label to treat symptoms, and we'll talk a little bit about those. There are many published articles that support this to some extent or another, and you and your physician have to work together to weigh the risks and the benefits of possibly trying these. If your doctor can't advise you, then you should seek guidance from an ataxia specialist. NAF has a list of ataxia specialists around the country, and you yourself need to stay informed. And there's the internet. Some very good sites on the internet where you can get information about ataxia and information about treatments and symptomatic benefits of things that we can put our hands on right now. And there's the internet. They couldn't put it on the internet if it wasn't true. So you sit and search cure ataxia, and you get stuff like this. Natural cures for ataxia, blah, 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 blah. Or, you stick in stem cells and you get people who really want you to pay for them to do their research. So I think we do have to be careful what we see. That testimonials are not guarantees of effectiveness. You really need to do proper science to get to the bottom of whether something is going to be helpful or not. So these are some of the symptomatic medicines that have published articles in their benefits for ataxia. Amantadine, Buspar, Chantix, and Riluzole, the ABCR drugs of ataxia. There's a similar list for multiple sclerosis. Common side effects may include dizziness and sleepiness. And I have patients where, I give them a prescription for amantadine, and they go and they look it up in WebMD, and they come back and they say, but this drug causes ataxia. Why are you giving it to me for my symptoms of ataxia? There are others that are less commonly used, and you'll find at least one article talking about the possible usefulness of any of these things for symptoms of ataxia. I have found fluoxetine, low-dose Prozac, to be helpful for certain types of speech and swallowing issues. I have found acetazolamide to be helpful for episodic ataxia, and I think there are people that could probably speak more about that than I do. For tremor, myoclonus, nystagmus, again, this is an alphabetical list of things that can be practically used if those symptoms are particularly bothersome, but again, common side effects may include dizziness, sleepiness, and ataxia. For tremor, Botox shots have been used. There's various surgeries and stimulator techniques that are in use or under development. So certainly tremor can be very disabling, but there are a lot of things in the menu that you can work on with your doctor. Drugs for fatigue, better energy will give you better performance. So these are things that have been reported to be helpful for fatigue and neurologic disorders of various types, and certainly many of them are worth trying. There was a little debate in the parents of Friedreich's ataxia patients group on Friday about monster drinks. And the general feeling was that things that contain only caffeine, maybe a little sugar, are probably okay to try, although mega doses of caffeine are not good for anybody. But many of the monster drinks and energy supplements may have other things in them that probably are not good to take. However, there are non-drug approaches to treating fatigue. You know, look for other illnesses. If you're on a medicine that's making you tired, maybe you can change it. Good nutrition, conditioning exercise program, weight management, pain control, good sleep, conserving energy, not doing things that waste all your energy when you can do them more efficiently, lifestyle modification, and emotional health. And one of the articles I think that's going to be presented next week is a study in Machado Joseph's disease, SCA3, about causes of fatigue. And we know ataxia can cause fatigue all on its own. But they found in their series, and said it was done in one of the clinics in South America, that depression was one of the major causes of fatigue. So, alternative or complementary therapies. Testimonials do not substitute for evidence-based medicine. Many approaches in the complementary or alternative medicine categories can be safely tried for maybe up to 6 months to see if they help. There's nothing wrong with that. These are some examples I took from Wikipedia. I just love Wikipedia. But again, not all the articles there are you know, quality control, so you do have to have a little judgment. I think herbs, diet, and vitamins are the ones that most people with ataxia are looking at and trying out. If you go in your search engine to the Stanford Hopes, just type in Stanford Hopes and that's the website that will come up. It's based in the undergraduate biology department at Stanford. It was put together as a website for information, genetic and clinical information about Huntington's disease. But they have an interesting section on treatments and supplements, which I think apply to certainly other triplet repeat disorders, the spinocerebellar ataxias, and probably other neurogenetic disorders. And they have them organized alphabetically. They have them organized by the mechanism in which they supposedly help. So there are supplements that can help with energy metabolism, supplements that can help prevent free radical damage, supplements that are anti-inflammatory. And one of the big things being looked at now in brain disease is not necessarily the primary cause, whether it's genetic or toxic, but there's a secondary inflammation that adds to the damage. And if you can just target the inflammation, you might be able to reduce disease progression. And then glutamate toxicity or excitotoxicity. And these are all prescription drugs. But these are prescription drugs that are available. Your doctor could write you a prescription for one of these if he wished. And if he was going to monitor you for potential side effects. So, you know, looking at this, you can click on any of these. It'll give a list of the research that's been done, animal studies, human studies. It'll talk more in depth about the mechanism and the rationale for potentially trying them. But again, serial N of one studies, and I've got many of these in my clinic. I have a lot of people who are taking CoQ10, one patient, N of one, one at a time. You can't do a research study that way. So if we wanted to do a really good study of CoQ10 in ataxia, we would have to design one. I know Dr. Supermoni had one that he conducted a couple of years ago. But it's unlikely that supplements and vitamins are going to be cures. So if we're thinking about designing funded